everyone, and welcome to the Tulsa World Opinion Video Podcast. And I'm here today with Representative Kevin McDougall, and you are from District 12, is that right?
Yes, that's Broken Arrow, Coweta, and Porter, Wagner County side.
So. Okay, good, because I was going to ask what the district boundaries were. So you're from the Tulsa area. Yes. And we're here to talk about the Richard Glossop case. Yes, and, ma'am. You know, it's safe to call you a conservative Republican. No one's going to doubt that. And your track record follows that. So your involvement with this case is unusual, that you've been on the side of innocence and his release. And that surprised a few people. But for background, I wanted, for people who don't know sort of the underlying facts of the case, and I want you to, and you can elaborate on this a little bit, but
sure. For
background, Richard Glossop was convicted in the 1997 murder of Barry Van Treese at the Oklahoma City Hotel that Mr. Van Treese owned. Richard was the manager, and a man named Justin Sneed was a maintenance man. And to avoid the death penalty, Justin Sneed testified that he committed the murder at the behest of Richard, and Richard's denied this. And a jury convicted Richard, which was later thrown out based on ineffective counsel, and a second jury convicted him in 2004. And since then, it sort of wound its way through the courts. So this is kind of the basic background. Can you explain what the status is today of this case?
I can, and there's so much detail even back then. So the first and second trials, one of the most aggravating things that happened is in between the first and second trial, the district attorney ordered, he'll say that he didn't, but somehow it got ordered that the box of evidence was destroyed. So our state actually destroyed 10 items in a box of evidence, which included DNA. And so that is completely gone. You can't go back and get it. It's out there. And in the second trial, Justin Sneed's testimony had a flaw in it. And the prosecuting attorney at that time had written a note to his attorney and said, we need to correct something in his testimony. So the prosecuting attorney was actually working with the attorney for Justin Sneed, telling him to change his testimony so it fit the narrative. And so we've got all that now proven. But that's back then. Now, just in the last 6 months, the Attorney General Gettner Drummond came in. He said, I want full transparency. He had some boxes that were obtained by the Attorney General's office when John O'Connor came in. They received 8 boxes of evidence. John O'Connor gave us 7 of those boxes so the defense could see them for the first time. And they looked through them and they found a few things in those 7 boxes, but they kept one box to themselves. And in that one box, there were 8 Brady violations. These are issues that, had the jury known them, could have made a difference in the case. And again, our DA says, nothing to see here. It's not that big of a deal. It doesn't matter that Justin was bipolar. Doesn't matter that he was on lithium. None of those things matter. He's had 2 jury trials, so let's put him to death. And now, Gettner Drummond, being in full transparency, when I went to him and I said, Gettner, we need you to look at this case, but I want you to do it personally. Don't allow your staff to tell you the status of it. You've got to look at it personally. I told John O'Connor the same thing. The staff at the AG's office fully believe that he's guilty 100%. And in fact, Gettner asked him, are you guilty? Is he guilty? And they said, yes, 100%. And that raised question, right? Because how are you 100%? You weren't there, right?
Right.
And so how do they think that? But Gettner looked at it personally and he realized, I need a third party to take a look at this case. Well, we had a third party already do an investigation. He didn't want to trust ours because he thought that it was somehow related to the defense, that they might be working together, which they weren't. They actually worked for the House of Representatives for me, pro bono. And so he got Rex Duncan, a conservative DA representative, to come in and look at this case. And I met with Rex Duncan, and Rex said, listen, I'm sure this guy's guilty. I'm sure he's culpable, but I'll look at this stuff. And so he started digging through it. And then he comes up with the same opinion that my third party came up with, Reed Smith. So now we had Reed Smith, Rex Duncan, going to the attorney general and saying, listen, this needs to be vacated. And Of course, when he looked at everything that they brought to him, he made the decision, which was very tough, because Gettner Drummond's tough on crime, but he saw the flaws in this case and said, we've got to vacate charges. So he vacates, we're excited. It goes to the Court of Criminal Appeals and they denied the vacation and said, no, we're not going to take your filing and we're going to ignore it. And Richard Glossop's going to be put to death. And so at that point in time, it was appealed to the Supreme Court. A stay request was also appealed to the Supreme Court or written to the Supreme Court. And the Attorney General himself wrote the Supreme Court and told him, you can't kill this guy. We've got error in this case. Just last Friday on the Lester Holt show, we were doing an interview. And during that show, they handed him a note and he said the Supreme Court has honored the stay and Richard Glossop's not going to be put to death right now. So right now it's a continuing stay until they deny the two petitions that are in front of them. If they deny both of them, he gets executed on the 18th if they do it before then. If they look at the one that the Attorney General wrote, said, hey, there's too much error, then Richard Glossop could actually go back for another trial.
And I will note that the NBC News, when you got the news, that was not staged.
That was not staged.
In real time.
That's exactly right. That's when I first found out about it. And then I started hollering for off camera. I started hollering for the people that were kind of next door saying, hey, you guys don't know this yet. In fact, we knew it before the attorney for Richard Glossop knew it. We had found out that quick. So,
well, you pointed out that all these people involved, these are conservative Republicans. And because the death penalty for so long has been sort of this divide between conservatives and liberals. And that's what your involvement, I think, is interesting, because no one's ever going to accuse you of being a liberal conservative. I mean, you are conservative through or liberal or progressive. Yes. You're conservative through and through. But yes. But what was it that brought this case to your attention? Because it goes against kind of a typical conservative lawmaker to champion this kind of case or cause. So who brought it to you and what brought you into this?
Sure. A friend of mine by the name of Justin Jackson had seen the documentary called Killing Richard Glossop. And he told me, he said, I think we've got somebody on death row that's innocent. Now, think about it. Innocence has nothing to do with the death penalty. I mean, if he's innocent and he's made it through our process and he's on death row, if I didn't speak up for him, who was going to? And I couldn't let that pass my desk. So regardless of whether people would think I was anti-death penalty or some liberal trying to fight this fight, I didn't care, because we've got a guy that's been fighting for his life for 26 years. And as a Marine, I can't let him fight that alone, right? I mean, I had to pick up that torch. And so once I got to the point that I knew he was innocent of murder, which is the only standard that should actually put you on death row, once I knew that he was innocent of murder, then I had to start fighting really hard for him. And that's when I got involved.
What was the element that convinced you of that? Because you're putting your reputation, your time and resources on the line here. What are some of those facts? Because we know a lot now, but you didn't right at the beginning. So what at the beginning you thought, this is the thing that convinced you?
Yeah, it was aggravating knowing that the state destroyed the evidence. There was also a video that was turned into evidence that they still don't know where it's at. It's not been found. The prosecuting attorney, we now know, didn't know that at that time. But I think when I saw that, I just thought, you know what? I've got to dig into this, because when you watch Killing Richard Glossop, it lays out so many things that you just think, is this is true? And I really didn't know if it's true or not, because, I mean, Hollywood makes all kinds of things look real, right? So I wanted to investigate it on my own. And when I went to our own attorney general's office and I started asking questions, they sat across the table from me and said, he's 100% guilty. Did you know he took a lie detector test? And they held this folder up and they said, he took a lie detector test. And I said, he did? I didn't know that. And they threw it on the table and said, he failed. And I said, I didn't know that. Well, I've since asked to see that lie detector test. It doesn't exist. Nobody can show it. So our own attorney general was lying to me at that time, or pushing the truth, the elements of truth, to get me to go away and not look under the hood on this particular case. So that raised a question in my mind. And then I went to Don Knight and I said, if you say he's innocent, prove that he's innocent. Show me something that shows he's innocent. And of course, he lays out all kinds of things that says he's innocent. Well, now as a legislator who's not an attorney, I've got both sides. He's 100% guilty. He's 100% innocent. So the only way I knew to do anything was to find somebody that could actually do an investigation. And when I charged them, they volunteered pro bono to give us 30 attorneys because we had to get it done quick. And they've literally spent over $1 million of their time on this particular case. But when they came back, I told them, I said, listen, I want to know if he's guilty. I want to know he's guilty. If he's innocent, I want to know he's innocent. I just want the truth because I can't go to one side. They're telling me this is the truth. And the other side's telling me that's the truth. I want to know the truth. So that investigation came back with 350 pages of a report, and reading through it, it was exactly like the defense was saying. I mean, there were so many errors in it, and so many mishaps and so many things. I mean, one of the key witnesses that the prosecution used was thrown in jail for perjury on another case. So if he's lying in another case, what makes you think he told the truth in this case, right? So, I mean, just so many things like that, literally 15, 20 things that you could go through and name that show that there was so much error here.
So have you taken any pushback or criticisms from fellow conservatives for your involvement?
You know, not as much as I thought. I will tell you this. If you try to raise funds as a legislator, it's better to be in business or it's better to deal with other things because people pay you money or give you money to run for campaigns and stuff. Nobody's writing checks for criminal justice reform, right? I mean, nobody, right. Because it's a
very hard needle to move.
It's very hard and it's difficult. It's not popular. It's something that in the legislature is very hard to get a bill passed on criminal justice reform. And there's lots of things I can tell you about there too. But in this particular case, I knew that I had to do it because nobody else was going to. And we just took up the charge and went on. And once I got that report back, Reed Smith continued to dig. They finally got that eighth box. They finally saw everything. And now we're at the point that we are now. So it's been a long 4 years.
So do you consider yourself for or against the death penalty at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm for the death penalty. I literally believe that you have to have a mechanism. If somebody rapes a little girl, slices her throat, buries her in a shallow grave, there's got to be a mechanism for somebody that's as egregious as that. The thing that's really raised pause in me the last 4 years is seeing how somebody can get on death row and be innocent. So if that's the case, if they kill Richard Glossop, you will see me running every bit of legislation to kill the death penalty in Oklahoma. Because if we can't trust the system, then we have to vacate what we're doing. And we have to be able to trust the system. The part that really gives me pause is it's people. The DA that's in charge of this case, the Court of Criminal Appeals, the Board of Pardon and Parole Board. These folks have seen this case. They know that it's wrong and are still deciding that, no, there's nothing to see here. That really aggravates me. I would rather somebody stand up and say, I made a mistake. We made a mistake in the past. Let's own it. Let's move forward. And I'll give you another example of that. Gilchrist, when she was falsifying DNA evidence, they fired her.
Right.
They didn't bring charges.
And that's Joyce Gilchrist back in Oklahoma City lab.
Yes. Right. They didn't bring charges against her. Why did they not? Because it affected 300 or 400 other cases. But the right thing to do there would have been to charge her with a crime, sentence her, and then take a look at those other 400 cases. I am sure that some of those other cases now that didn't get looked at because they never charged her with a crime, they just wanted it to go away. Some of those other cases were false. We've now in Oklahoma, out of 120 people on death row, we've had more than 10 that were exonerated by DNA evidence. And Richard will be number 11 when he walks out those doors, and he will. So if 10% of the people you're putting on death row were actually innocent, we've got some work to do, or we shut it down. One of the two.
Well, and that kind of brings up a thought. I've covered like 13 or 14 executions in my career. And I know of at least two where the condemned was not the actual murder. They were part of the crime. And no one came to their defense. No one was rallying. It just sort of, well, that's the way it went. And I'm thinking even now, how many people do we have on death row that fall into Richard Glossop's category of innocence or may not have been as egregious as what the prosecutor said? Does that give you pause? Do you think about the people that aren't getting the attention from lawmakers and documentary makers and things like that?
Absolutely.
For them?
Absolutely. I've got 30 more cases. I've literally got that many that people have come to me. I had another one today stop me on the steps and say I was wrongfully accused, right? And I know how much time it's taken me personally in this case alone. Honestly, I was telling somebody today, if I had $70 million, I'd start a company, I'd hire a bunch of investigators, and I'd look into every one of them. We have no check and balance right now. We trust our DAs, and we've got some great DAs. We've got some great judges. But what happens when you get a bad one? What happens when somebody doesn't stand up and say, Joyce Gilchrist, we should have charged her and looked at all those cases that she was involved in? They don't want to do that. They want you to believe that the system is pure, that justice prevails every time, and that the system gets it right every time. And honestly, I think Oklahomans would be better off if we finally had a DA that stands up and says, guys, we got it wrong. We got it wrong. We need to do it over. And even if it means you're doing over 300 cases, I get that's a lot of work, but it's the right thing to do. And that's what I want to see. I just want to see these guys doing the right thing. Whether it's hurtful to admit it or not. Right. So
it's a human system, like the criminal justice system. We have checks and balances somewhat with the criminal court of appeals, but they're all made of humans. And I've always sort of thought at the end of the day, we can make human mistakes, where do those gaps exist?
We can make human mistakes, but there's also, the system that we currently have, four out of five court of criminal appeals folks are DAs. Four out of five on our court of criminal appeals. When you go to the pardon and parole board, out of those five members, three out of five are DAs, right? Or worked in a DA's office. So their mentality is not necessarily, let's take a look at this guy and girl and see if they've rehabilitated. I mean, that's not their job. As a DA, they're prosecutors, right? These guys charge after folks. So why do we have them making decisions on the pardon and parole board as to whether or not somebody's rehabilitated? Their mind is already slanted the opposite way. And so looking at that makeup, I'm thinking we've got to change that in the state of Oklahoma to where, why do we have pardon and parole board that even has law enforcement officers at all on it? Why don't we have psychologists on it that can evaluate whether or not somebody's truly rehabilitated? I mean, there's things like that that we need to look at and change, but the DAs love it because they don't lose a case. Right. They send it to court of criminal appeals, and guess what? They've got four buddies sitting up there that will help rule on their case. So I hate that it's that way, but when I started tying all these things together, I mean, when you've got everything in this case that we have and we send it to the court of criminal appeals and they look at it and all five judges deny the attorney general, the top law enforcement guy in the state, and say, you're wrong, we're going to go ahead and kill him. Something's going on.
Or at least a fine balance that it shouldn't be predominantly prosecuted.
Exactly.
At least bring some balance to it. But over the weekend, the Tulsa World had a story about how with this case, some district attorneys in the state are upset about it. And their criticisms are, you're forgetting the family of the victim, or this flies in the face of respecting court decisions. When you read some of that, and I'm sure some of the district attorneys have reached out to you, what's your take on some of those criticisms?
Yeah, the Barry Van Treese family has been a victim twice. Mm-hmm. They lost their dad, father, friend, family member when he was murdered. And I honestly think the second time is when their DA continues to lie to them and tell them that there's nothing to see here. He's guilty. Don't believe those guys. They don't have any evidence. They don't have any medical records. They don't, everything that you're hearing us say, I can lay out a piece of paper and show it to you. It's not something that's made up in my head. And these guys still say, nothing to see here. So that family's been lied to by their own DA for a number of years that continues to tell them that he's guilty. And I think it would be better for him to go back and say, listen, we made some mistakes. This guy may not be guilty. They could literally not give me a piece of paper, a blood trail, anything that ties Richard Glossop into this thing, other than that the actual murderer himself says, Richard Glossop told me to do it. Now, he gets off of death row and gets life in prison for that testimony. But what they didn't show the jury never saw this. I've watched the videotapes where the two investigators have Justin Snead, the murderer, in a room, and they're talking to him and they're telling him that you're not smart enough. You didn't do this on your own. Did you know we have Richard Glossop arrested? Did you know Richard Glossop saying that you did it? Did you know Richard Glossop's throwing you under the bus? Did you know Richard Glossop saying you're the one that's doing it all on your own? He's throwing you under the bus. They mentioned Richard Glossop's name 6 times in that interview. And then they turn around and say, you're not smart enough to do it. Who helped you? He confessed to a prison cellmate at one point that he thought Richard Glossop was a snitch and he wanted to pay him back. And that's why he testified against him. We've got that affidavit, but nobody wants to listen to a prisoner because they always lie. Well, now I'm finding out there's a lot of people that lie on the other side. And so in this particular case, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
You mentioned if Richard Glossop is executed, if all of this fails, that you will lead the charge in getting rid of the death penalty. But if he's spared, are there still some things in the criminal justice reform? Are there still some legislative measures that you see yourself saying, hey, even though we were successful here, we've got to fix some things here? What's sort of on your mind on that track?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Death Penalty Review Commission that was put together, I believe under Brad Henry, continued under Mary Fallon, and they studied for 3 or 4 years, and they came up with 18 things that we could change on death row that would help eliminate an innocent person from being there. Not one of those 18 things has been implemented yet. Not one. So that entire report, however many millions of dollars we spend on it, have been completely wasted, and we can't get it through the legislature. Now, another thing that is a dynamic that people don't think about, when we have criminal justice reform in the House of Representatives, we have 2 committees, judicial committees, that these bills have to go through because that's what they deal with. Well, guess what? Because there are legislators that are attorneys that know that arena, they get put in charge of those committees. So we've got an attorney in charge of one judicial committee. We've got an attorney in charge of another judicial committee, both of which have to work with other judges, DAs, and attorneys. So a lot of times when a good bill that's good for the people come to those committees, it's not good for the legal practice, and therefore it dies. And if it's not those two that kill a bill, you've got, I had the AG's office kill a bill one time, not the current AG, but under Mike Hunter. I had a bill moving through the process and they went around my back here in the legislature, talked to a number of people and got it killed. The DA's counsel has been in my office a couple of times and said, hey, we don't like your bill. We don't like the change you're wanting to make. We don't like it at all. And they'll smile at me and I'll smile at them and I'll say, well, then you come up with a solution. We'll work on that. They've not been back in my office since. They don't want a solution. They like where it's at. And so it's so difficult to get anything through the legislature until we can impress upon the minds. Dr. Phil today was on the House floor, talked to a number of legislators, both House and Senate, about the importance of changing some legislation. So I think that's what we've got to do. We're starting there. Get people interested, get them to see the real issues. But it's not standing up and doing a debate in 5 minutes. It's literally, I mean, this is 4 years of my life now, trying to show video and trying to show stories and share press conferences and bring in Dr. Phil to tell him how important this is. And maybe we're getting somewhere, but it still feels like we're not sometimes.
Well, you know, you certainly didn't run on a criminal justice reform.
No.
This is something you have learned as a lawmaker. Right. And I think that's impressive because it shows people, you know, that you're interested in what's affecting people. But what would you suggest to people who are listening and also want to affect change? They want it like what you want, to break some of the gridlock, to make sure that innocent people aren't convicted. What should they do? Where do they begin?
Yeah, I think to get laws passed, they're going to have to call their senator. They're going to have to call their House of Rep member. They're going to have to come visit them and share their stories with them. I mean, this is one story out of 50 or 100 that I've heard in the last year, right? There's so many issues, and there's always going to be issues because, like you said, people are involved. So I'm not condemning our criminal justice system at all. I'm just saying, help me fix it. And I've gone to them and said, help me correct this. How can we put an innocent guy on death? I mean, surely even our DAs don't want to kill an innocent guy. But I'm finding that not all the DAs agree with that. I mean, they're literally, I'll tell you right now, Prater wants to put this guy to death. He doesn't care what the evidence is. He's no longer a DA. Thank you. We do have a DA now that has taken his place that I think is going to be outstanding. And she's going to clean up some problems that have happened over there. We've got an AG that's now going to look into these things. They now know that the legislator will raise questions on these cases. And so I hope that all across the board, our DAs start policing themselves. And they should. I mean, if they know they've got a crooked DA in a bad case, they should be the ones standing up. I mean, I'd rather have 45 of our 47 DAs standing up saying they're right. This evidence shows that he didn't get a good trial, but instead we have a number of them, including the DA in Tulsa County, Kunzweiler, shows up. And I asked him the other day on a conference or on one of our press calls, is he willing to put his name on this case? Are you willing to execute Richard Glossop and put your name on the case? Because if you are, I want to show the evidence behind this, and I want to show everyone else the stand that you're taking. Because the evidence is clear in this case, he did not get a fair trial.
I've always kind of pondered that too, because along with the executions I've covered, there have been three cases of innocent wrongful convictions that I covered. And in each time, there was one case that there were three different DNA tests came back showing he was innocent. And the prosecutor, district attorney, still fought it. Three different labs, three different tests said the same thing. And there is a mentality that I've never quite understood, that it's almost like once you're convicted, it's a brand.
And
it never gets looked at again. At least with death row cases, there is a mandate to look at it again. But I do see how hard it is to get someone another look, you know, whether they're innocent, you know, whatever the conviction is, whether it's a death penalty or rape. And it's always struck me how there's a mentality that just fights it, even when it's clear. So I agree with you.
Tell you how hard it is. In Richard Glossop's case, I am fully confident he's going to walk out of jail. There'll be a day that's a big news story that he walks off a death row and gets released. I believe that. But I'll tell you this, it's not an individual, it's not a law, it's not an attorney, it's not any one thing that happened that got him to that point. It's literally a miracle of God when it happens, because it took our governor issuing a stay that I'm not sure he would have issued had it not been in the political season that we were in. It took the attorney general getting elected that we have now. It took Vicky Behenna getting elected in the DA's office in Oklahoma City. It's taken, I don't know how many phone calls and how many people are involved in this that have brought different evidence, Reed Smith and the people they have. And I mean, everything that had to come together to show this evidence. And I really wish Oklahomans would come join us and look at it themselves. I mean, don't take my word for it. By God, go out and look at this stuff yourselves and see how bad this is. And they're still fighting it. They're still fighting it today.
If someone wanted to do that, is there a place where someone can go, like that you're looking at, if they wanted to look at the reports you've mentioned, where should they start? Where should they go?
Yeah, if they'll get a hold of my office, we can send them a link that shows the report that Reed Smith put together. Now the DAs are going to say that's a biased report. Now, wait a minute. Okay, then let's look at Rex Duncan's report and see what it says. And let's try and wave that one off. And then, okay, let's go look at the attorney general now who said too much error in this case. So those are three things that they can do. Just go download those two reports. There have literally been attorneys going through boxes of evidence and videotapes and everything else. So at some point, you've got to believe somebody in this thing and take a look at the reports they put out and see what you say for yourself. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I'm in a place that if I make a phone call and say I need to see something, I can get that. And I understand most people can't. But that's why they put me here, right? They put me here so I can do those kind of things. And I've worked my butt off trying to get to the bottom of this thing so I can verify for them that this stuff is there. And I understand there's still critics, right? But so how do you get to a point that everybody believes it? But I don't know.
Well, you know, I thank you for your time. I was going to ask you about other legislative stuff, but that'll take another hour if we start talking about education funding and tax cuts. So I'll have you on again and we'll talk about those things. So
that'd be awesome.
And I also always give the guests the last word. So what are some of the parting thoughts you want to leave today?
I'll tell you what, if you ever have a friend that says they've been wronged in a courtroom or they've been wronged by a DA or they've been wronged, you might want to listen to them a little bit because not everything is what it appears to be. And once you dig down deep and you get under the hood and you start looking at evidence, I believe there's a lot of people that have had issues. I'll also say this. I've got a good DA personally. He's a good DA. So I know there's good DAs in Oklahoma. There's some great judges in Oklahoma. Let's stand up, each and every one of us, and do the right thing and police ourselves. The DAs should be policing themselves. Our judges should be policing themselves. If they see something wrong, call it out. Our law enforcement officers, the same way. If you see a guy that's stealing money every time, you know, he pulled over a car, he's got $1 million, he turned in $600,000, turn that kind of stuff in. We've got to do the right thing. And if each and every one of us will do the right thing in Oklahoma, we'll be so much of a better place. And so let's just keep an eye out and help other people when they're down on their luck as well. So that's all I know.
Well, I appreciate it. And I hope for a good end of the session. You got 3 weeks left. So maybe after that, you can come back and we can talk about other things. So thank you very much.
I'd love it. Thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.